It's a real privilege to be here this morning. As Matt shared, Grace Adventures and Olivetti Free have had a long relationship. I actually have known the Cramblets for a long time, and I went to Cornerstone with Chad for a year. And so I still think fondly of him despite that, and really have enjoyed their family and their support for us over the last couple of years. I really need to set something straight, though. I write two blogs, to be honest with you. I write one for Grace Adventures. It's a leadership and training blog. I've been writing it for about 3 or 4 years, and we serve 11,000 people a year. I oversee all of the publications. Everything I can do, I try to do to get people to go to that blog, and nobody reads it. There is, like, really good stuff on that blog. Nobody reads it. I can't pay people to read that blog. Go to our homepage. You can get it right off the homepage of graceadventures.org. Kendra and I started writing a blog as we went through this journey, and Kendra's my wife, and it was really just to inform our friends and family of some of the updates and things that we were going through, and it's really kind of grown and just taken off and gone out of control. We had 90,000 page views the other day in the last year. We've had people over 55 different countries have read this blog, and so I think to myself, Ryan, what is the difference between the camp blog and this blog? And it's either Kendra or God, but it's certainly not me because I write for both of them, and nobody will read that one. But if you would like to read it, I would love to have you join us and follow our journey, and I've got cards with the address on that I could hand it to you afterwards. A little bit about myself. I haven't always been the handsome, good-looking Christian young man that I am today. Actually, before I knew the Lord, I was in a couple of really dark places, and God has not always had a prominent role in my life. I was pretty self-centered. I didn't have any concept of what sovereignty or lordship or any of those big Christian words meant. And just really wrestled with my identity. And then, at the age of 4, I decided it was time to surrender all that and give my life to the Lord. The reality is that I've been unbelievably blessed to grow up in an incredible home with an outstanding godly Christian heritage going back 4, 5, 6 generations. I'm the 4th generation in a row in full-time Christian camping, only by the grace of God. But growing up, I was always exposed to and latched onto a lot of themes that you hear in the church over and over and over again. Some of those themes like God is in control. It is well with my soul. You know, he talks about all the trials and tribulations, and he sings, it is well with my soul. Great is the Lord. And you hear these things over and over and over again. God's got a plan. Everything happens for a reason. And it's easy to sing those words and to say those things when everything's going well. I was driving in this morning, and I heard the song. I don't even know the name of it. I just heard it last week when I was speaking at a different church. But the chorus says something along the lines of, he drew me gently to the cross, and now I'm sweetly broken. Those words are really easy to say when life is going well. When we're happy, our family's doing well, things are going well at work, we're healthy. But what happens when things don't go so well? You see, Kendra and I got to figure out how this thing works here. Here we go. Kendra and I had things going well for a long time. This is my wife. We were high school sweethearts. Started dating when I was 15. Way too young. Do not start dating that young. But it worked out, so I can't really say too much. We got married when I was 20. And we had a lot of plans and hopes and dreams of where God was going to take our family. And so a few years later, my first son, my only child, Colton Scott, was born. That was April 14th, 2010. And life was going along well for us. And it was going along the way we had planned it. And so if I go back to last spring, last March, we had just settling into our first home that we had bought. Kendra was at a great school district. She's a teacher. I'd gotten a raise and a promotion at Grace Adventures from the ranch manager to the marketing director and was moving up. And we had our first child together. Things were going well. We'd been married for about 4 years, coming up on 5 years. And everything was going the way I had planned it. I'm a planner. Okay, I line things out. I see things. And it was going exactly how I had planned it. God is in control. It's easy to say that when everything's going well. I have to back up a little bit. I have a liver disease called primary sclerosing cholangitis that I was diagnosed with less than a year after I got married. And it's very serious, and it's incurable, and those things kind of changed my reality at the time, but for the last 5 years, it's really been dormant. I would go down to the University of Chicago and meet with one of the world's leading hepatologists and get updates twice a year. I'd do MRI scans and blood work, and for 5 years, I'd go down. It became so routine that I went down by myself, because every time we went down, he came back and told us, everything looks great, you're doing fine, Ryan, no worries, we'll just keep going. And so last March was one of those times where I went down by myself, and I called a friend of mine. I said, Chad, I don't know why, but I got a funny feeling about this one. I don't feel right. And he did exactly what a good friend does. He says, don't worry about it, Ryan. Everything will be fine. So I went down, met with the doctor, had the scans, and I always come home and wait for them to give me the call for the MRI report because I don't want to stay down there for a couple of days. So I went to work, and this is April 1st last year, one of those beautiful spring mornings. One of those mornings where the grass is green and crisp. I've got horses on my property, and so I was giving them, doing chores. You can see the breath coming out of their nostrils. You know, just a gorgeous April morning last year. Went to work. It's a busy time at camp, and so I was pretty busy. We're getting ready for summer. Very excited, but expecting a phone call from my doctor. Later in the afternoon, the receptionist told me that the University of Chicago is on the other line. Do I want to take it? I think so. Doctor gets on the other line and he says, Ryan, I don't know how to tell you this. Are you sitting down? That's the first clue that something good, not good, is going to come down the road. He said, I don't know how to tell you this, Ryan. Are you sitting down? I said, yeah, doc, I am. He said, I know that when you were down here, we talked about that really, really rare chance of cancer that you have. That the longer we wait, the higher the chance of cancer. And you were asking, should we do the liver transplant sooner than later so that we don't get the cancer? And I told you, Ryan, don't worry about it because you're healthy, you're fine, your blood work's fine, your MRI results are fine. It's a slow-moving cancer. If it ever presented, we'd catch it in time. Don't worry about it. Ryan, I don't know how to tell you this, but you've got spots on your liver, and it's really consistent with cholangiocarcinoma, that cancer that we were talking about. And as a matter of fact, it looks like it's spreading rapidly, and I can't help you. This is the doctor I chose because he's one of the world's leading hepatologists telling me that he can't help me. He said, Ryan, as a matter of fact, the only thing I can really recommend is that you go out to Mayo Clinic and you go ask and see if they can help you. If anybody can help you, they'll be the ones that can help you. That was April 1st. I hung up the phone. I didn't know what to do. I mean, that's 25 years old. What do you do when you get a phone call like that? And so I called my wife, and she was home on spring break. And she started to tell me something about what Colton was doing that day, and I had to cut her off. I said, honey, I need to tell you something. She says, okay. I said, Dr. Reddy just called, and he got the MRI results back, and he said that there were spots on my liver. He thinks it's cholangiocarcinoma. She says, Ryan, don't mess with me. It's April Fool's Day. Ha, 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 you're real funny. Ryan, I said, no, honey, I'm serious. He just called. I just got off the phone with him. He says, we have to go out to me. Ryan, you're joking, Ryan. Ryan, you're joking. Ryan, I'm going to be really mad at you, but you're joking. Ryan, please be joking. Ryan, this can't be serious. It's April Fool's Day. Ryan, please be joking. And as my voice started to crack, she started to realize that I wasn't joking. And as her voice started to crack, I started to realize this was going to affect a whole lot more than just me. This was going to affect my family and my wife and my almost one-year-old son. The hardest part is diagnosis. That was on a Friday. We sat there not knowing what the future held. All we knew is we have this extremely dangerous, very rare, very serious disease in my body, and we can't fix it. We couldn't set any appointments. They don't give you a lot of information. You just have to sit there and dwell on it. And so all weekend long, we just got to let that stew of what our new life was going to look like. Fast forward, we tried to get out to Mayo as fast as we could. It took us about a week and a half to 2 weeks. We went out there with my folks and my wife and my son and hoping and praying and begging God that a transplant would be an option, that it wasn't too far advanced because the only cure for this disease is a liver transplant. I remember driving out there looking at the clouds somewhere in Minnesota and going, God, just give me a sign everything's going to be okay. Lord, please just spell something out in the sky and give me that sign that's going to tell me I'm going to get through this all right. I don't know how many of you ever tried your hand at cloud divination, but I'm not very good at it. I didn't get the sign I was looking for. And so we got out to Mayo, and we were standby. So we had to wait until there was somebody that canceled or somebody missed their appointment. We waited in the waiting room and waited and waited and waited. And we had packed not knowing if we were going to be there for a couple of days or for 9 months recovering from a liver transplant. Everything was so up in the air. And we're playing with Colton, trying to keep him occupied, and we're waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally, after a couple of days, we get in. Kendra and I grabbed each other's hands and looked each other in the eye, and we kind of said a little prayer, and we walked in and followed the nurse to the doctor's office. The little guy comes in. He says, "What do you know?" I said, "Well, I know it's serious, doc. I know that it's very serious, but we're hoping that through chemo, through radiation, through surgery, we can get cancer-free, and then we can maybe do a liver transplant. I know that you guys do liver transplants after there's cancer. We're hoping that you'd be willing to do that for us." And he kind of just shook his head, and he said, "Ryan, that's not going to be an option." I said, "Ryan, you're stage four. Stage one would be the best. Stage four is the worst. The cancer is spread outside of your liver into other organs. There's not a lot of options. As a matter of fact, I don't recommend aggressive chemotherapy. I don't recommend really anything because it's going to affect your quality of life. Nothing's going to help you too much. So what I really would tell you is go home and enjoy the time that you have. You've got less than a year to live." That was on my son Colton's first birthday. He turned one the day that I got told I wouldn't get to see two. And so, my whole life, I've been pretty successful. I graduated college or high school with a year and a half out of college. I played four varsity sports, had 10 varsity letters. I held down all the jobs. There was nothing really that I would set my mind to that I couldn't achieve or do. If I got in trouble, I could talk my way out of trouble. I went and got two college degrees in 3.5 years. I married the one that I wanted to marry. Everything that I had wanted to do, I was always able to do. And for the first time in my life, I truly felt powerless. I didn't know how I was going to get out of this. And so as we drove home, this is my son when he was 3 months old. As we drove home, we stopped at a roadside diner somewhere in Minnesota, and we had a decision to make. You see, we don't get to choose our circumstances. We don't get to choose who gets cancer or what stage or who gets into a car accident or who gets laid off or whose family member decides they want to start acting like an idiot all of a sudden. We don't get to choose those things. But we do get to choose our attitude. We do get to choose our heart condition. And so as we drove home, we chose that we were going to celebrate Colton's birthday and not let this cancer affect his experience. And we stopped at some diner, and you can't really see it there, but maybe here you can see the bloodshot eyes and the tears as we smashed cake into his face and sang happy birthday and chose to celebrate Colton's first birthday. Now, if you're doing the math, that was April 14th. 374 days or something ago like that. I was told I had less than a year to live. Last weekend, we celebrated Colton's second birthday. It's been an incredible year for us so far. To be honest with you, it's been one of the most difficult years of our life. I've been going through intensive chemotherapy. We did find a doctor in Chicago that had a pretty dramatically different opinion. Yes, it's serious, Ryan, but we have to be aggressive and we have to go after it. And we're going to do everything we can because you've got too much life to live. And so I've been going through pretty intense chemotherapy for the last 11 and a half months. And there have been times where I've been puking my guts out. I lost 15 pounds in 3 days. This is my chemo buddy one day when I was getting an infusion. Mentally, the toll of our circumstances have weighed on my wife and I. There have been moments where I've been screaming at Kendra, not even knowing what we're arguing or what I'm upset about. And I can't tell if it's the drugs that I'm putting into my body, if it's the drugs that I'm taking to counteract those side effects, or if it's because I was kind of a jerk to begin with and I've still got a sin nature. I've had moments where I can't remember anything. I get this side effect called chemo brain, where I just go foggy. And it's like I can't process my thoughts or my emotions. I said I played a lot of sports in high school, and physically I've been pretty active my whole life. I ride horses, I train horses, I play pickup basketball, I like to be outside, hunt and fish. this is taking a toll on my body. I feel like an 80-year-old man some days. I can't get the jar off the glass. I can't feed the horses. I can't stand for very long. This has been the most difficult year of my life. But when people ask me that, I get to share that it's also been the best year of my life. You see, people, or from the very first moment, literally from that first day when we were diagnosed, back on April 1st, there was this overwhelming sense of peace that I can't describe. There was this sense of clarity that our eyes were opened. For the first time, I've been a Christian my whole life, and I've had peaks and valleys just like many of you have had. But for the first time, I was seeing God in a way I'd never seen Him before. He was so clear, so real, so intimate. It's like He was walking along every step of our journey, and I knew that God was in control. My relationship with Kendra was more important than it had ever been before, and Colton was more special. The work that I was doing at Grace Adventures was more relevant. Everything seemed to just come into high definition for the first time, and that's where our slogan comes from, is we feel like we are seeing life in high def. God has been so faithful and so graceful to us throughout this entire process. And a verse that really, I think, sums up the experience for us is 2 Corinthians 1:9. It says, Paul's talking. We know Paul's journey and his struggles and all the things that he went through as he served the Lord. And he says, in our hearts we felt the sentence of death, but that was to give our eyes away from ourselves and on to God who brings people back to life. Somebody shared that verse with me within the first couple of weeks, and it just, I don't know how many times I've read that verse before, and it didn't mean much to me, but now it means everything to me. In our hearts we felt the sentence of death, but that was to turn our eyes away from ourselves and onto God who brings people back to life. And so I said that I felt very powerless in that experience. I didn't know how I was going to get out of it. But the reality is, God has promised us in 1 Peter 1:3, that through a divine power, He gives us everything that we need for life and for godliness and our knowledge of Him. And so I'm powerless on my own, but through my knowledge of Jesus Christ and my willingness to surrender my life to Him, I have absolute power for no matter what will come down the road. And I don't need to worry about tomorrow because I know that God has prepared a way for me to get through it. And so this has been the worst year of my life, and it has been the best year of my life. I've been able to do and experience things that I would have never imagined. I can't control my circumstances, but I can control my reactions. I can control my attitude, and I can control my choices. And so Kendra and I have chosen that we're going to choose joy, and we're going to choose life, and we're going to choose hope. And I want to share some experiences of the last year that we've been able to celebrate because of God's grace in our life. This is us renewing our vows in our 5-year anniversary, May 13th, less than a month after I was diagnosed. This is a trail ride with my son Colton as he fell asleep on my lap. This was a year ago, in between diagnosis and renewing of our vows, at an event at the Grace called the Ride-a-thon, where you ride horses to help raise money for our ranch. And like I said, I'm pretty passionate about horses. Yesterday, I got to go to the second ride-a-thon, not knowing that I would have been able to do that a year ago. This is just a couple of weeks ago, and I get to continue to parent and teach Colton the life lessons and the skills, but to point him towards God and be a role model and example of what he is in my life. We celebrated his birthday the other day. This is his birthday present. He got a pony named Buckaroo for his second birthday. And so I got to lead him around and show him how to ride horses even more. And this is us, not knowing what the future holds, but knowing that it's going to be provided for and that God's going to open up the doors that He calls us through, and He'll provide the grace and the power for life and for godliness. Not just to survive, not just for life, but for godliness through that process. And so as we've gone through this for a year, He's continued to open up our eyes, and it's not that we just learned something the first week of diagnosis and that's the only lesson. Seems like the more obedient you are, the more God asks of you. And so I want to share some lessons in obedience, because it's a lot of work to go through and battle a terminal cancer diagnosis for a year. It just takes a toll on you. And the emotion and the adrenaline wears off after a little while, and then it boils down to, are you going to choose to continue to be obedient or not? And so I don't know where you're living today, and maybe terminal cancer is not something you can relate to, but I guarantee you we've all got struggles we're dealing with, or we will have struggles that we'll deal with. And I also can promise you that God calls us to be obedient no matter what life is like, whether we're in a valley or on a mountaintop. And so I want to share some lessons in obedience, and hopefully they'll resonate with you, and you'll be able to take something home today. The first one is that obedience isn't dependent upon our circumstances. We pray, your will be done. Do we really mean it? What if praying, Lord, your will be done, is a 26-year-old wife saying, I may be a widow in less than a year, if that's your will? How does my wife pray, your will be done, if it means that she'll be left with Colton in an unknown future? How do I pray, Lord, your will be done, if that means that I'm going to get called home soon? We pray your will be done, but really I think a lot of the time we mean, Lord, my will be done. Do we have to be obedient when things don't go well? Is this something that is a give or take with God, that so long as he follows the plan that we lay out, then we'll be obedient to what he asks and things are going well, but if things kind of take a left-hand turn, well, then I've got a license to go do whatever I want to do. You see, I've gotten the opportunity to interact with a lot of people that have had cancer diagnosis over the last year. It's a world I never expected to be a part of, but I am now. And I meet people that talk to me about their bucket list. Oh, I got to go do this, and I got to go do that, and I want to go do this, and I just want to go do that. And you know what? I'm not going to poo-poo that completely, because I've gotten to go do some really amazing things, and Kenner and I went on a great vacation over Christmas. But I'm not motivated by this checkoff list of all these things that I want to do. I also don't get a license to just go do whatever I want to do because I've only got a year left. When I get to heaven, God's not going to ask me how many vacations I went on, how many guns I bought, how many horses I trained, how many mountains I climbed. He's going to ask me, Ryan, what did you do with the widow and the orphan and the lost? And that is what motivates me. You see, living in high definition isn't just an emotion. It causes us to react. It changes how we live our life. And it motivates me to serve God both practically and emotionally. And so just because I have cancer and it's serious doesn't give me a get-out-of-jail-free card from being obedient to God and doing what he calls me to do. And just because he's given me a difficult circumstance doesn't mean he hasn't called me to do other things that get me outside of my comfort zone on top of that. I would tell you, I feel like Kendra and I have probably been more obedient the last year than we've ever been, and it also feels like we've been the least obedient that we've ever been. The more we try to surrender, the more I become aware of how much I have left to give. And how it's like you think you give 99%, and you just have that 1% left. You can't ever get that 1%. The more you try, the more you realize you probably only were given 10% to begin with. I don't know. We don't get to choose whether we're going to be obedient or not based on our circumstances. The second one kind of goes along with this. Obedience isn't dependent upon whether it makes sense. You see, there's so many times in this journey that I try to figure it out in my mind. I'm an analytical kind of guy. I like to think things through. And there's so many times I can't make it make sense. When you first get diagnosed, you struggle with why me and why not them. I've always been a pretty good kid. I didn't get into a lot of trouble. I wrote an article, an assignment when I was in second grade about what do you want to be when you grow up. You're only supposed to write 4 pages. I wrote 16 because I wanted to be a camp director when I grow up, ever since I was in second grade. I went to school to get a degree to go back and work in ministry, full-time Christian ministry. I'm not getting rich off of it. I wanted to serve God and use camping as a tool to change people's lives. Why me, God? I've got so much potential and a heart surrendered. Why would you choose to call me home early? There's so many other people, God, that it doesn't seem like they've got it figured out. Why me? God, I just had a son. Why would you even allow us to get pregnant if you knew a year later you're going to give me cancer and I might not be able to raise my son? What did my wife do to deserve this, God? it doesn't always make sense in my mind. The actual cancer doesn't make any sense. You see, most people with this cancer are 50-year-old women and older. In case you haven't noticed, that's not my demographic. It's a slow, slow, slow moving cancer. I was 0 to stage 4 in less than 6 months. I had a completely clean MRI 6 months before. 6 months later, I'm totally stage 4. The odds of all of these things happening are astronomical. It doesn't make sense. I can't make it make sense. We had scans last week. Things have been going well. God's opening up ministry doors for Kendra and I that are just incredible. I've been able to share our story with her and by myself over and over and over again in front of thousands and thousands of people. I shared the blog with you. She's at school. She's working at Grand Haven. She's got students, both saved and unsaved, that'll come up to her after she posts a blog and talk with her about it. Miss Prudham, I can't believe you could say and believe the things that you do. You guys just have so much hope and happiness. I don't know how you do it. And she's able to share why she has that hope. God's opening up so many doors. And so we went down to Chicago last week, and we had another checkup with scans. I've had 6 sets of scans throughout this journey, and can I tell you that scans are not a lot of fun? I think I age about a year in the 5 minutes before a doctor walks into that office. So much rides on his report of what happened on those scans. Are we going to get a few more months? Is the cancer spreading? Is it shrinking? We had to start shrinking at one point after it started growing, and he told me it's not going to shrink. Most of the time, it's just been stable, and we've been glad for stable. Last week, after things have been going so well, just on Wednesday, the doctor came in, and he said, "Ryan, how you feel?" I said, "Well, doc, actually, my side's kind of been hurting the last couple of weeks." He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Why do you ask?" He says, "The cancer started growing again." It doesn't make sense, guys. God's open. I mean, I feel overwhelmed when I think of everything that God's got for me to do left in my life. I couldn't do it in a lifetime, so I don't know how God's going to do it in a year if that's what his plan is. It doesn't make sense to me. And that's where I have to come back to Scripture. And a passage that I've known, and I'm sure you have heard over and over and over again, Proverbs 3, 3 through 6. No, that's not it. 5 through 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord, and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. Obedience isn't dependent upon whether it makes sense in my mind or not. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Now, in the moment, I can't make it make sense. But when I get past it and I start to look backwards, it's vividly clear what God is doing. As I look forward, I'm not entirely sure. But there were the month before I got diagnosed, I prayed to God. I said, "God, I'm kind of in a valley right now. I don't feel very close to you. Please open up my eyes to see you more clearly." I've prayed my whole life, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit later, for compassion. "Lord, I don't have compassion. Please change my heart. Lord, I want to serve you more boldly. Help me to be more bold. Lord, give me more opportunities to share who you are with people." In an instant, all of those prayers were answered. And so who am I to say, "God, please answer my prayers, but don't do it like that. Only do it the way that I want you to do it that makes sense in my mind." When he's told me that I'm not to do that. Don't be wise in your own eyes. You can't figure it out, Ryan. Who do you think you are? And so as I learn to surrender it having to make sense, I have more peace with the unknown. Next part of this journey is that obedience is an everyday thing. It'd be nice if we could just have these experiences that change our life and then we're good forevermore, but unfortunately it doesn't work that way. And I said I had some valleys and some mountains before I got diagnosed, and I've had valleys and mountains after I've been diagnosed. And Kendra and I have to make a choice every single day, are we going to be obedient or not? When the doubts come in, when I feel an ache or a pain, can I tell you that cancer makes you paranoid? Every little itch or pain, you just sit there and you don't know if that's the cancer growing or not. And then you start making up phantom pains. But then you don't know if it's real or if it's not, and should I call the hospital or shouldn't I? And is this something to be concerned about or isn't it? But every time I get one of those real or phantom pains, I wonder, what's the future look like? Every milestone I come to, the back of my mind, I try to push it out, but the back of my mind, I ask the question, are you going to get to do another one of these? Christmas, birthdays, anniversaries. Is this the last one? And when we were at that diner on April 14th, on Colton's birthday, I told my family, I said, we're not going to go through life living every major milestone like it's our last. I'm not going to do that. But that doesn't mean that thought doesn't creep into my mind. As I tuck my son into bed, and I pray with him, and I wrap my arms around him, and it's about the only time I can get him to sit still. And I wonder, how many more times am I going to get to do this? Happened this morning, I was shaving, and he came in and he started watching me. And I took the back of the razor and I rubbed it on his cheek. I said, Colton, do you want to shave? Die. That's how he says yes. And I wondered, am I going to get to really teach him how to shave someday? And when those thoughts and those worries or those aches or those pains come into my mind, and those are just my worries. My wife has a whole different set of worries. Come into my mind, I have the opportunity to start spiraling into a dangerous and a scary and a dark place. And growing and moving towards depression and towards anxiety and worry and doubt and fear and hopelessness. I can't control when the thoughts come in. They just do. I can't control if it hurts. It just does. But what I can control again is what am I going to choose? Am I going to take those thoughts captive and surrender them every day and choose to be obedient and choose to say, God, even though it doesn't make sense and even though I feel afraid right now, I know that you are in control no matter what. And so I have a simple prayer as a tool that I use. It's like a mental procedure that keeps me pointed towards God. Whenever I think about cancer, I just say, Lord, please heal me. And it's more than just those four or five words. First off, it's Lord, you're God. You're sovereign. You are in control and I'm not. Please, it's a request. Your will be done, God. And if you choose not to, I know that you're going to provide for my son. And I know that you're going to provide for my wife. And I know that you're going to provide for the ministry I'm a part of. And it is an honest request. God, please heal me. But what it does is it instantly takes my mind off of the cancer and onto God. And I may pray that prayer 5 times a day. I may pray it 50 times a day. But what it does is it helps keep me focused on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour, sometimes minute-to-minute focus basis on who God is and the promises that he's given me. And so obedience is an everyday thing. And it's not something that we can turn on or off from day-to-day or just because we have a mountaintop experience, it'll carry us maybe for a few days, but it certainly won't carry us for a lifetime. Next thing is that obedience requires an understanding of our total dependence on God. I shared with you before that I've been pretty successful my whole life. And I've known that God's blessed me. And I would have told you if you'd asked me, Ryan, what's the key to your success? God's just really provided and opened up a lot of doors. And I thought I understood my dependence upon God, but really, it was a thinly veiled allusion to God because I took a lot of credit for my successes. I've worked hard. I've disciplined myself. I've made the right choices. I didn't make the wrong choices. I've been honest and upright. I've tried to honor God. And that's what, you know, you go through all these things that I've done. And I took a lot of credit for my success. And a lot of you are probably familiar with the passage Jeremiah 29:11, God's promising to Israel, for I know the plans that I have for you, plans for a hope and a future. Well, I'd like to share with you Ryan 29:11, for I know the plans that I have for me, plans for a hope and a future. You see, even though I thought that God had blessed me and provided all these things, I still had that plan in my head of where I was going. I told you I was a planner. 5 years out, 10 years out, 20 years out. I want to do this. I want to do that. My family's going to look like this. You know, Kendra and I were planning on building a house. I forgot to tell you that right in the first week that we got diagnosed, she got laid off from her job too. Everything came crashing down. We had just finalized the blueprints for an addition on our house the week before I got diagnosed. That was predicated on her salary and my salary combined. But it was really represented more than just a house. It was the house we were going to grow into with multiple kids and all of these dreams. And it was on our property with our horses. And I've got a ministry where I train horses and I share truth at the same time. And I go to schools and churches. And I've always envisioned that growing. So I had ministry dreams. I had family dreams. Grace Adventures is taking off right now, and there's some incredible things happening. And as the marketing director, I get to be a major part of that. So I had professional dreams. All of these plans that I had laid out. And I thought, sort of, that God was the reason why I was successful, but really, I took too much credit for myself. And I think it's kind of like Paul on the road to Damascus. You see, Paul had everything going for him before God got a hold of him. He was educated, he was wealthy, he was successful, he had prestige, he had a reputation as a Pharisee. Everything was going the way he had planned and anticipated it. And what it took was this cataclysmic event in his life that God had to strip everything that he depended on and make him blind before he could finally get a hold of his heart. And I talked about that song that I heard on the radio this morning, Sweetly Broken. Gently you draw me to the cross. Well, unfortunately, that wasn't Paul or my experience. I'm not sensitive enough, or I wasn't obedient enough, or I don't know, but it took a disaster before I got broken and brought to the cross. And that's my hope and my prayer for you guys tonight, is that no matter what you're going through, that you could be able to see high definition without having to go through that, and that you could be sweetly broken by surrendering yourself before something like that happens. But the reality is, we are completely dependent upon God for everything that we have. And people ask me all the time, say, Ryan, you don't really deserve this. This isn't fair. Don't you wrestle with it not being fair? I say, you know what? I think you're right. It's not fair. It's not fair that even though I'm a sinner, and even though I have spit in God's face time and time again, He has blessed me with a wife that loves me and a son that is healthy and loves me and comfort and physical health for the most part, even though I'm dealing with cancer, and a ministry that supported me, and a job that I have, that everything I do helps to change people's lives. That's not fair. Because what I could be, and the only reason I'm not, is because God somewhere made a sovereign decision that I can't comprehend, is I could be born an orphan to a prostitute in India living in a gutter somewhere. Why am I not there, and why am I here? And how dare I take credit for anything that I've done when I should be there, or worse? And when I understand how dependent I am upon God for everything that I have, you see, I can't get up in the morning and not take for granted that I'm breathing. This terminal cancer diagnosis opened my eyes to living life differently. To not wasting the moments that I have, but to rooting out the things that are irrelevant and that I wasted my time with before. And dads, I'm going to get after you right now. How much time are we spending at work? How much time are we spending at the golf course or in the shop? I'm not saying you can't go and do that, but what's the priority? I still go for trail rides, and I'm going to go golfing this summer. But I'm going to do a whole lot less of it because I'm going to choose to invest my time in serving my wife and my family and those around me. And I'm going to do that because the time that I've been given is a blessing and not a right. Because I'm completely dependent upon God, I start to look at things differently now. And the things that I took for granted and that I thought were rights, to be healthy, to live long, to have a house, to have a success, to have a family, those aren't rights, those are blessings. Time with my son. I could grieve and mourn the potential loss of being able to be his father, or I could know that he has a father, and I'm just his caretaker for a little while, and while I get to have him, I'm going to praise God and do the best that I can. But he's got a dad that's going to take care of him. And it's a blessing that he chose me to have him in his life for a few years or longer. And so when I'm completely dependent upon God, it forces me to be obedient and to change my attitude. And the last thing I want to share with you is that obedience transforms our heart. When we act on the things that God places in our lives, it transforms our heart. And I shared with you that I've not always been a compassionate person. As a matter of fact, my wife is extremely compassionate. I do my best to counteract her. We're, you know, like that. When I got diagnosed with the liver disease, I went and it was right before Christmas break. I was still in school, and I knew I had a couple of weeks by myself at home. And I was afraid, 20 years old, where's my mind going to go? So I started reading the Bible. I ended up reading it through cover to cover in 9 days. Part of that was because I was afraid. Part of that was because I was on steroids and I was up 23 hours a day. But when you read it like that, you read it as narrative. And you hear certain themes come out. And one of them was that every time Jesus comes around a crowd of people, especially lost people, this theme of compassion. He felt compassion for them. Compassion felt upon him, came upon him. And so I just said, God, please change my heart and show me what compassion looks like. In an instant, he transformed my heart. I used to have a callous, judgmental spirit. And now when I walk through a town or a mall or an athletic event, I see people's eyes hurting and gray and lost, and it breaks my heart. Because I know the hope that I have in the midst of a difficult situation, and I want to give that to them. And so it doesn't just change my heart, but it forces me to have to share it with other people because it's too selfish of me not to. In a passage somebody gave me after I was diagnosed with the first liver disease, is 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 6. And it says, "Praise be to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion, with the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also we comfort abounds through Christ. If we are distressed, it is for your comfort and salvation." I know why I have this cancer. It's to help people see life in high definition, and it requires a personal relationship with Christ in order to do that. I also have it to provide comfort to those in their distress. And so all of these lessons in obedience and this new perspective that I have really lead up to having an eternal focus and not a worldly focus. And as Kendra and I choose to live life with hope and with peace and with joy, it requires us to put our eyes on something different than on ourselves and on our circumstances. And in the passage that Paul wrote, and I don't know why, but Paul and I have just been spending a lot of time lately together, in 2 Corinthians 4. And this is the same man that was beaten, shipwrecked, whipped 3 times, imprisoned, literally sentenced to death, lost his ministry. He writes these words, "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. And what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." If every negative physical, emotional, mental, professional circumstance could be laid on this man's life, and he can call it light and momentary, in view of the weight of the glory that he is attaining, what must heaven be like if everything bad that I can imagine is light and momentary compared to that? What is glory like, and how does that not motivate me to live my life completely surrendered to God no matter what happens? And how do I get that view? I take my eyes off what is seen and put it on what is unseen, because what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen will be eternal. And so I've got a terminal disease, guys, but so do all of you. I just get to stare it in the mirror a little bit more frequently than you do. But let us not take for granted that we've got extra time and tomorrow will be the day that I'll share my relationship with Christ with my friend or my dad or my brother or my coworker. Let us not take for granted that tomorrow will be the time that I'll take my son or my daughter out for a date. Let us not take for granted that God can do incredible things through our lives if we're willing to be surrendered, no matter what age we are. Like I said, I feel overwhelmed when I think about what he's got left to do. But if he's going to do it in 6 months to a year, I'm going to buckle up because it's going to be a wild ride. And no matter where you're at or what your life circumstance is, you too can have that same experience. And so if you don't have that understanding, that relationship, if you can't relate to the peace that I'm talking about, I'd like to invite you to join me in knowing a God that loves you no matter what you've done, that is wants what's best for you. But remember, that's not always what's best in our own mind. That wants to walk along this journey beside you and has already done it before for you. And is willing to give you the grace and the peace and the power for life and for godliness no matter what you're facing. And so if you've never made that decision, if you don't know God in a personal, intimate way, it doesn't take a whole lot. All you have to do is acknowledge that you're not perfect, that you've messed up before. You've lied, or you've stolen, or you've gotten angry and said something you wish you wouldn't have. You've lusted or coveted. I've got a 2-year-old, and can I tell you, I really think the argument on whether sin is inherent is closed. How do kids learn how to lie? They just do. All you got to do is admit that I've done wrong in my life, and I can't do enough good to outweigh it. And that God is real, and that he sent his real son to the earth who did do it perfect. Because his word is clear that there's a penalty for our sin, and that something has to die. And it ought to be us. That's what's fair. So when people tell me it's not fair, that's what fair is. But unfairly, God made a way that I don't have to die because he sent his son and he lived a perfect life and then he died in my place. And because of that, I have power for life and for godliness through my knowledge of him. And so, if you're sitting here this morning and you've never made the decision to have a personal relationship with him, I'd like to ask you to do it. Don't waste another day. Don't miss another opportunity. And if you're not sure how to do that, I'd love to talk to you afterwards. Or I know the elders here who will be down up front would love to talk with you. And if you have made that decision, but you're wrestling with what is God's will and purpose and how do you overcome difficult circumstances, we felt like we were given the sentence of death. That was turning our eyes away from ourselves and onto him who brings people back to life. I don't know what the future looks like, and I don't know if God's going to heal me physically, but I've got new life right now. I've got life that I've never had before in my entire experience on this earth. And so if you're sitting here and you'd like to experience that, I'd love to talk to you about that, and I'm sure the elders would too. Because when you make those decisions, whether it's for the first time or whether it's over and over and over again, what happens is, even though you can walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and there's demons and there's dragons on the cliff tops shooting down arrows trying to steal your joy from you, you'll be able to say, "The joy of the Lord is my strength." And nothing will be able to take that away from you. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for this morning and this gorgeous morning. Father, that you're in control of the seasons and the weather, that you're in control of our lives. Father, that you have plans and purposes, and that your word promises us that you work all things out for the good of those who love him. Lord, help us to see you more clearly. Root out the things in our lives that hinder and distract us. Father, help us to serve you fully surrendered and obedient, and that we would choose that every day, that we would know how dependent upon you we are. Father, that we would be willing to share the hope that we have with those around us. God, I pray if there's anybody here who's on the edge, that you would make them so uncomfortable that they have to call out to you. Father, if there's anybody that's not made that decision, Lord, draw them into your family, that they too might have the hope and the joy and the peace that comes only through knowing you. In your name, amen.